Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. So you hear the crackling fire every day. Good evening. This is Gather Round, and tonight we're talking cooperation and collaboration. So, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Howdy. Quite a few of us right now. We've got Gwen, Joe, Kim, David, and Trish. That's you, right?
It is.
It is. Okay, then. So we're all here. And I've never started out with five other people before, so this will be fun. But you guys are the epitome of cooperation and collaboration because you're all in a group called Roundtree 7. And from radio network owners, station owners, to writers, newspaper writers, everybody, you're also talented. I think it's wonderful to get you all together. And like Joe was saying, you know, he wants to meet everybody. So we've got David Williams from Roundtree 7, who is a writer, and you'll be telling more about yourselves as you go on. Gwen Holdenberry, who is on blogtalkradio.com/here-b-monsters. P.E. Nolan, www.menopausalstoners.blogspot.com. Joe McEvoy is on worldwidehippies.com, although now we're saying, what is it, CJ?
Citizen Journalist Exchange.
Okay, that's
CJE.
What. And it will still come up, Worldwide Hippies, right?
Yeah, it's at Worldwide Hippies.
Is that, okay. And then Kim G. Publisher at awopradio.com, and that's AWOP. So, I know Kim she expressed to me what I've been thinking too, that these two things, cooperation and collaboration, are really the only way that we're going to be saving ourselves. Do you all pretty much agree with that, or do you think that we may be exaggerating?
I think both are very important.
Yeah. I think it's hitting the nail on the head myself.
I think it's the only way that anything's going to occur. It's going to take a collaboration and group thought to express the ideas and actually have the actions that are noticeable in the general public.
Well, right. And I think that's the important part, too, that are noticeable. Because it's important to do things even if it is behind closed doors. Very important sometimes. But it's good to do something that was going to benefit everyone. And, you know, words are important to all of us and definitions. So I just looked these two up because they're very similar, but not the same. And cooperate means to act jointly, work towards the same end, assist someone, to associate with another or others for mutual benefit, which pretty much sounds like collaborate to me. But the difference, apparently, collaborate is work together towards shared goals, but more than the intersection of common goals seen in cooperative ventures, a deep collective determination to reach an identical objective, sharing knowledge, learning, building consensus. And collaboration frequently requires leadership, although this can be just a social thing within a decentralized group. So does that make sense? Does the difference seem right to all of you, or would you rather refine it a little bit?
You know, the internet for the last 10 years, but really for the last couple of years, we've used the internet as a tool to collaborate with, and it's the only place that collectively, and you talk about leadership, I think we're all being challenged to be leaders right now and to work together with each other. The internet is allowing us all the tools we need for this to happen right now are there for us.
I agree 100%. And technology hasn't been available before, even, you know, 8 years ago. It wasn't as reliable as it is now. I mean, we're all collaborating right now and never seen, well, most of us haven't seen each other or met each other, and we're from all over the country.
Plus,
yeah,
I think the internet has given a rare opportunity. I mean, there's this brief window of allowing, you know, the common citizen to express ideas and actually be able to communicate those to the masses. And that window only opened up maybe 10 years ago, and is, in my opinion, going to be closed here pretty soon, maybe 5 years, where it's going to be so controlled and regulated by the government that any kind of idea that would instill power to groups is not going to be allowed.
I think you're right.
This window is very brief.
I don't know that that's correct. I think the cat's out of the bag, and they're going to have a hard time putting pussy back. You should pardon my metaphor, but I really do think that even if we're not working on the channels that are government allowed, if you will, if people have technology and the signal can be put out, I think that the cat's out of the bag. I think that possibility is there.
Well, if I can jump in, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I certainly think that the stream is still going to remain for commerce, but I don't think it's going to have the freedom. You know, it may be 5 years, maybe 10 years, but you know, I can already see some of the writing on the wall where, you know, they start off with, well, we got to regulate it because of Chinese hacktivists, and also I read something today about how WikiLeaks and other groups are considered threats that must be
they're terrorists.
Dealt with in legislation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it starts with that, and then pretty soon it's the slippery slope of, okay, who's a terrorist? You know, a terrorist may be someone that just doesn't agree with the government's policies at the time.
I think you're spot on. I think also, too, very much already in place are the tools that they just need to flick the switch. They really do. They have us back on it from your cell phones, your computers, you know, satellite TV. They're not using it, but they're all hooked in. So I would agree with you, but I also would think that because of the internet, because of the amount of information that is available, there's a lot of smart people that will find ways around it. One thing in particular that I've been reading up on is the use of local area networks.
And yes, I have too. Yeah, I've been reading about that. Great
and
promise with that.
Yeah, hooking them together, and then you're bypassing the mainstream internet completely because you don't need an internet provider.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually do it with, you know, just actually your modem, your wireless puts out enough power right now that if it was hooked in with another wireless down the street and so on, you have your internet.
I absolutely agree. I think that may become the equivalent of what might have been a local neighborhood press or maybe a pirate radio back in history,
right.
where ideas are brought out, and then someone else carries that idea, almost like a human chain, where the idea is spread.
Yes,
yes, I agree absolutely with that.
And the technology is just growing, you know, and the government, it would, you can never stop them, but you sure can slow them down and misdirect them, you know. And if they're going to spend their time, effort, money, and other resources on controlling the internet the way it is. Everything is done right now through internet providers. You know, IP providers are who they're dealing with. If you can cut them out, now they have to deal with everybody individual, you know,
mm-hmm.
and a local area network is the way to do it. And who knows what else new is coming down the line.
Yeah, exactly. Like with WikiLeaks, when they were attacking them, I remember they actually couldn't find a DNS or ISP provider. They were just jumping all over the place, and you couldn't look up WikiLeaks, and it wouldn't look up the DNS and find the address. So they were actually having to supply just the IP numbers, and then even that was getting to be a trouble. They were jumping all over the place. So you can have the message, but if you don't have the conduit, which they control, then it could be some problems.
WikiLeaks has been a big problem, too. I try to get there every day, and the only way that I can get to WikiLeaks from any of my computers is to go through third parties.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And I get those, but then I keep losing them and having to find new ones. And interesting how that's not out in the public. You know, most people don't know that if you're trying to get to WikiLeaks, you're not going to get there. And I rely on them quite a bit, even if it's just for knowledge that I want to have for myself to see where trends are going.
Well, they still have it where you can't pay with any kind of credit card, give donations. You know, Visa and MasterCard and the others, American Express, even though they didn't really have a legal reason, they just refused to accept payments and allow them to go through to WikiLeaks. I think they eventually went to Bitcoin, but, you know, if you're an organization, even though you may not be doing anything against the law, if they cut off your funding in some way, it's just another way that they can attack you.
Mm-hmm.
Not to try to sound paranoid, but, you know.
Hey, I don't know how
to get it, David. You're right, though. I think we have our little local area network still right now, and I call them personal blogs. And with the more people you have, the more little voices that can get loud over nothing. I know, Trisha's blog, she covers kind of her own little niche area, and you just multiply that by hundreds of thousands or millions, and it becomes obvious to me where power really lies if we use it, if we cooperate and collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that's important. It's Trisha. And the thing about it, you know, listening to all this is like, I think David's right that, you know, whatever happens in the future, I don't like to think about because, like, that's all speculation, you know, and it can go, we can all speculate all night long and never get anywhere, whereas in the moment, which is where we're at right now, we have this opportunity. And listening to Joe say that people have a hard time getting to WikiLeaks, like, the people don't know how hard, I think largely that's because most people are more interested in this country, anyway, and getting to Burger King than they are, or, you know, getting to WikiLeaks.
Have it their way.
Just WikiLeaks.org, I get to it every time. Maybe I'm just one of those people with those addresses.
You're not a high enough threat level yet, Glenn, to be cut off from WikiLeaks.
Well, it's interesting because I used to be able to get it on one computer and not another, even when we were in the same room. But now all my computers, I have a problem getting it. I wonder why that could be.
But, you know, back in, and it happens occasionally in some of the Middle Eastern countries, the country may shut them off, and yet they have ways of getting around it. In fact, I've reposted. People would send me things to post because, you know, if you can get to somebody in this country, if this happens, they can get online this way. And as you all, if you know me, you know I'm like beyond low tech. So I don't know how it works, but I know it does work.
Yeah, well, that's the term viral, too. I mean, right there.
It's usually like a proxy server type thing.
You know, Kim, you've used lots of venues on the internet. Could you talk about that a minute, about what you have found to be the better venues or the troublesome ones?
You mean in terms of what exactly?
If you use Stream and you went out, we're going to go over to YouTube.
Broadcasting my show live?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Well, I think I've pretty much... Maybe I've tried them all. I started out with the Blog Talk Radio, and that was cool for a while, and then I wanted to do some other things and incorporate video and other people on camera and that kind of thing. And so that's when I went to Ustream. And Ustream has been fairly reliable for me as far as the actual platform goes. But the problem that I have with Ustream is that I can't afford a premium platform channel, which would take away the advertisements. And I'm all for supporting, you know, the platform with advertising dollars and supporting it with my show. But, you know, instead of just getting a pre-roll and then going into your show and then maybe something afterwards, Ustream will stick in a 30-second commercial at points in your show, and you don't know when that point is.
Yeah.
And,
they do that while you're live?
Yeah, yeah.
But it may be something that you don't really appreciate advertising either, right?
Yeah. Well, it could be. I mean, you don't really have a lot of say-so with that sort of thing for their ad servers. But more than that...
It's a chunk of your show, right?
Well, supposedly it would stop the broadcast, sort of put it on pause, and it would pick up after the commercial, but... I don't know. It was very disruptive. I mean, you know, if you're talking to someone about a serious subject and you're in the middle of an interview and you know, it's at a point where you don't want to miss something, it just stops and it goes into a Tide commercial. I just didn't want that, and I couldn't afford the $99 a month it takes to get free of that and brand your own channel. And so I started looking for other alternatives, and I tried a platform called Spreecast, which allows you to bring people on via browser onto a live broadcast through their webcams and the microphone and their computers or a mixer. I have a mixer, and I'm set up for external running my sound through my computer through that. But the Spreecast was really glitchy for me, as it has been for several other hosts that I know. And so now I'm about to go to Google Hangouts on Air. I did some testing last week with Kenny Pick from Turn Up the Night, Kenny Pick, and we really thought it was pretty awesome. And it, I think it's going to be my new platform for airing the live show.
Wow, cool. Good. That's great information for any of us who are working with these different communication venues over the internet. We need to know this stuff.
Well, that's one of the things that I do as far as the theme of cooperation and collaboration is I'm self-taught basically on how to do all this stuff and with help from some of the gurus out there, I've had to have them step in and help me on occasion, and so I've attained a certain amount of knowledge that I've spent a lot of time putting together. And so that's one of the things that I really enjoy doing now is helping other people who are trying to step into the audio-video arena, like take their blog to a multimedia experience for people and that kind of thing. And I've been doing that for a site we just finished called TokeSignals.com. It's a cannabis activist and news site, and it's coming along really nicely. So the next phase is to start the podcast, and hopefully we'll be getting that done in the next month or two.
That's great, using all the different technologies too.
Well, it's not as complicated, or it's pretty fairly easy to use, but sometimes there's a learning curve, and that's where I've been fortunate that people that have learned ahead of me have been willing to cooperate and collaborate with me to teach me the things I need to know so that I can teach others. And, you know, just to go back to what you guys were talking about, a future of the internet, I totally agree with everything everyone said. I think it's all true. I think it is under threat. I think it's under threat for some very specific reasons, and that is that the people who are in power in this world do not want people talking to each other and telling each other the truth.
Absolutely.
It's bad.
In a nutshell.
That's right. The single sentence nailed it.
Yeah, it's very simple. Yeah.
It's bad for business because the status quo is making them billions of dollars, and they want it to stay just like this. And so that's why the internet is under threat. So when you see things like CISPA, and it's all about, you know, we're trying to protect somebody. When they tell you they're trying to protect somebody, they're doing just the opposite.
Run.
Yeah. Trying to protect themselves.
Right. So, number one, if we're going to save the internet and use this tool for good and raise the consciousness of the planet with it, we have to take back our government. That's the first thing we need to do. Take it back from these lunatic, greedy...
I think all of us agree on that. But Kim just talked about how she has been helping people. And I'd like to just ask if, you know, a few of you, how you've either been cooperating, collaborating, or somebody has been with you. Trish, do you have any great stories to tell us?
Me? Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about collaborating, you know, I'm listening to all this about the internet, and but I keep going back to the block area in my classroom. Because I'm a preschool teacher and I work with two-year-olds, and that's really where people are cooperating and collaborating all the time. Before we get older and in our group, you know, in our niches, and I think that the way our society is structured, we get more and more isolated from each other. And certainly, the internet has helped with breaking through all of that. I do my own little blog that focuses on things like where am I going to hang the mirror in my house. I mean, it's really personal, although it is, I think, reflective. But the point is that one day I don't even know how I got to Worldwide Hippies. I really don't know if I must have seen something on Facebook. I don't know. I just followed a link, and a fellow that writes for Worldwide Hippies named Phil Palazzano, is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, Hippie Phil, Hunga Dunga Phil, he wrote a book. Anyway, Phil had written this article, and it spoke to me, and it was called, I think, Come Out Wherever You Are. And I left a comment on Worldwide Hippies saying, well, I'm here, you know. And Phil followed up and then handed it off to Joe, and then I started doing some work with Joe and writing over there, and I still do my own thing. That developed into a spot on the news, which will be reviving soon. Through that, I met Gwen and the rest of all y'all, although Gwen and I knew each other through a different blogger, and so that's who was also pretty personal, or a personal writer. And so the thing is that, you know, we, our circles overlap and interconnect, and, you know, we work together to build something. And just like we were before people told us, you know, to work individually and, you know, all these things they tell you in school and all these things they tell you in the world, to be your own person and all this individuality and this isolation and egocentrism, you work together to build something, and whether, you know, whether that's a clay mountain or a tower or a communications network so that we can reach out from our homes to connect with others, because I think Kim is right, you know, we have to band together, whether it's in a local network or whatever, because it's so big that nobody can do it by themselves, but together we can make a difference.
Right. Yeah, you some of you have probably heard me with one of my favorite African proverbs. It's if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I just love it. I mean, it's so simple, but I think it's so true. And that's what you're saying. If you know, you can work by yourself and you can get a lot done, but over time, I mean, things are going to come up where you really will benefit if you are working with others.
If you take a look at what's going on in the world right now,
yes.
We are actually going. We are putting ourselves through all of these catalyst crises that are really directing us to revive community with one another just simply for survival. I think that Occupy or Decolonize or Idle No More are wonderful examples of the necessity of a community that has a goal, yes, but we have our own little communities, you know, with the circles that Trish was talking about, but also wherever it goes down the road from here, we need to figure out how to become locally sustainable. Are we not all considering planting gardens and growing our own food because we don't know what the future is going to provide for us? I mean, even in cities. So
it's that sense of community, I think, that is a real big, that's a huge word that has a great deal of resonance right now, is my point.
Yeah. I'm still looking for an eco village in case anybody knows of one. I guess I'm going to be checking out one in Southern Illinois in a couple months. Eco village is one of these very much, it's more than a cooperative. It really is a collaboration because people start depending on each other for things that we don't living in. I don't live in a city anymore. I live in a town, but I don't, I really don't depend on my neighbors that much. Like Janelle says in chat, we're better together. We sure are. And I think that, did all of you grow up with brothers and sisters? See, I didn't. So
me either.
I did.
I call them collaborators or even necessarily cooperative, but we did learn how to work and get along together.
Exactly. I mean, you learn how to work things out. Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this today. My brother Person, I mean, we're not blood, but has a brother too, and both of them have lovers. So there's four guys living in a house. And when I'm there, I'm just like always watching how they get everything done and how they cooperate. And like you say, I mean, it may not always be pleasant, but they get things done. I mean, they work together because there's things that need to be done. And it's always fun to, you know, even hear guys arguing or who's going to do this cleaning or whatever. If we've got a bunch of people coming, you know, they want to clean everything up. So it to me, that's just it's fun to watch because I didn't have that myself at home growing up. And I think that's what, well, I mean, Trish is teaching two-year-olds, but most of us learn this kind of stuff from our home situation, I think. And then we just carry it out. But what about you, David? What give us some thoughts on cooperation or collaboration.
Well, I have sort of a little bit different background. I started off as just blogging and writing stories for another website, and then me and Gwen and Al also got together, and we started talking back and forth, and we had the group idea of that we have this opportunity that social media is presenting to us that we can try to go beyond and bring messages and try to bring light to some subjects that we felt were being sort of swept under the rug, you know, try to become the fifth branch, you know, from the failure of the fourth branch. But we went from that and then writing the stories, and then also we tried to add some additional stuff. I tried to get into some more like iconic video, you know, almost taking a sort of a marketing idea where they have iconic images and iconic videos. And so I thought, well, I could bring together some songs, but try to piece that together with some images and try to present a message like that. And that worked pretty good.
You do wonderful videos.
Yeah, sort of a library of those. But, it's sort of a morphing thing. I mean, you change as you go along, and then you that's one thing good about Facebook is it sort of allows you to build up some coalitions. You know, sure, you know, not everybody thinks alike, but I think a majority of what people think in the different groups that you get together, they tend to think, go for the, the common good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have some slight ideas. But the whole thing is you're building up these coalitions and groups that are much stronger than just a single person or maybe two or three people. And that's what I like about this show is you're saying cooperation and collaboration. Well, that's all what it's all about. You have to build up these coalitions of strength that, is much more efficient in getting your message across.
Right. And I can
get spot on, David.
Well, we're all trying to get a message across. And we all have our niches, but we all have a basic message, too, I think, for the world. Joe, what about you?
Well, I actually got cooperation and collaboration. I kind of see we're doing both of that right now. I would like to just add one thing to what David was saying, and that is as things evolve, I try to look not only for people who agreement, but maybe people that I'm not aware of or not educated on who they are and what they do. I'm trying more and more not to go into things, you know, saying looking for something that I have in common. Rather, just keep an open mind and see what kind of comes to me.
Mm.
I guess what I'm trying to say is we don't know it all. That's kind of what I'm saying, and that I think by reaching out or being open to things that are totally or to somewhat opposite of what you may be into, by being open to it may make you think of something that, you know, we may be ignorant about. You don't know about it, and if you take time to listen to people with different approaches or ideas, how will you ever know that you're on the right track if you're not willing to kind of test it? Mike, can I ask anybody?
Well, yeah, because you're talking about growth. I mean, we benefit so much from this, just as far as, I did want to ask David if he taught himself all of these things as he was going along.
The video editing, yes, I sort of self-taught there. You know, I'm sort of into computers a little bit because it's sort of a job requirement. You know, I'm an engineer, but the video stuff, that was sort of interesting. And my personality is like I'll get interested in it, and then my whole life becomes that.
Ah.
I have to wrap myself around it, and then I go on to something else. You know, it's sort of probably a psychosis or something. I don't know. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up was a subject of drones. And when you think about it, this is just give the strength of social media. It's my opinion that if you didn't have social media, Facebook and the blogs and stuff like that, that the subject of drones and how they're being used and people pointing out the attention for like sites like the Bureau of Investigative Journalism and other sites like that, I think that the 70% of Americans that agree with drones would be like 90%. So, you know, I think there's a big failure with the mainstream media of presenting that particular subject. And, you know, one thing that could be pointed to as look, you know, it is doing some good. I think that's one subject that you could point at that, you know, drones would be completely controlled as far as information if it wasn't for social media and blogging, pointing these things out and becoming a sort of a stick in the craw of the politicians that want to just keep it secret.
Mm-hmm. I did not know 70% of Americans were for that. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
You know, a perfect example of why alter indie media, and I include guys like Mandy Jalonsky and Charles,
Ivana.
Yeah, fair. I mean, all of them, we are a greater network of crowd out in this show, you know, that extends out. But my point is that it's Wednesday. On Sunday, almost 40,000 people were on the mall in Washington, D.C. And it was the largest climate change rally in the history of the country. And it was precursed by a Tuesday demonstration in front of the White House itself. In other words, there were people willing, and among them were people like Robert Kennedy and Bill McGibbon, and the guy who actually is the head of, and I can't remember his name, but he's the head of the Sierra Club, which is never disobedience. And these guys, and Bobby Kennedy was absolutely eloquent with what he said before he was arrested. He was right on, and it's like you have to take a stand. And it's only independent and alter media that is really reporting these things. And then Sunday, when the large faction of people were on the mall in a demonstration and protest, they were demonstrating for climate change and bringing that, you know, bringing that subject up. Plus, they were protesting the XL pipeline with TransCanada, and many people in Washington that we've had on our shows, lots of, you know, just
And where was it in the media? I didn't really see it represented in mainstream media, because as Kim pointed out earlier, we are being sold a bill of goods. There is no true fourth estate there. It's basically a corporate media driving us to make purchases and to believe whatever the corporations want us to believe, so that the country can be run with this mentality of, you know, labor produces for the 1%. I know I'm sounding radical and disjointed, but I think pretty much.
I think you're spot on. Keep going.
Folks are getting it. And one thing I would like to add, too, is that my show, Here Be Monsters, is basically an offshoot of Roundtree7.com, which it was, as David explained, he and I and also getting together with Mike Stimson and, Jack Jodell, and I'm not thinking of Tricia Poole, P.E. Nolan, all of our people there, and folks who contribute every now and then, like Manny Jelonsky and Kevin Blanche. Does anybody know Kevin Blanche and listen to his radical videos? I mean, this is a guy who needs to be heard. He's fuck, yes, but he's also...
Gee there, though. I mean, the energy that he was delivering was part of his message.
And not only that, but he has spent the last year keeping up the glory and Fukushima and the downwinders and fighting leukemia at the same time. The man has my admiration, I got to tell you. And Here Be Monsters and Roundtree 7 and Worldwide Hippies and AWOP Radio and Air Martafeo and the Akashic Temple and Progress Towards Democracy, all us little guys are the ones out here, you know, saying what needs to be said. And if only, I don't know what your numbers are, we all go and read our numbers and we know a certain percentage of those numbers are listening to the whole show. However, if only 10 people or 5 people or 20 people go out with that information for the rest of the week and bring up the conversation and awaken others to the issues and to the truth that we are giving, what we think is the due diligence on what's going on now. Well, I mean, honey, we're doing the job. We are getting it done.
Well, I'll tell you something, man. Yeah, you can see my numbers. Man, when Manny Jelonsky is on my show, I have a very, very high finish.
Well, Manny does so much work on the ground. He does the legwork. He's out there. He's going old school with the print newspaper, too, I think largely because from what we're saying about the Internet and things like that. I mean, Manny's outstanding, and I think that David's point about the drones is huge because, and like Gwen is saying about the thing in D.C., the point is that people rely on us to spread the word because it's not on TV, it's not on the radio, it's not in the newspaper, and you know, but it may be on Worldwide Hippies, or maybe it's on my blog, and you know, my mom's neighbor reads it, and okay, it does change the conversation little by little. It's like the cross pollination that you see in a garden. It's like each one teach one, but that's what happens to build, like Gwen talks a lot about the grid of energy and light around the planet and building the grid. And whether you look at it from a metaphysical, spiritual standpoint or whether you look at it from a technological, hard news, I tell Janelle, Janelle tells Paul, Paul tells Joe, it's a grid. And it's cool, and that's what's necessary.
And that you know we all I'm speaking for everybody. I mean, I've really made some enemies evidently, and I get a little ticked, but then I think, well, I must be doing something right.
You know,
it's like okay, and they're talking, but hopefully some of the people that they talk to aren't quite that close-minded. But it makes
but
it interesting.
The other part of this, though, Raw, is that you're doing, and everyone sitting at this table and everyone listening in, and who will listen in, it's about where we are trying to retrieve our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The values, you know, it's David, you're better at saying this stuff. Really?
Say it, David.
Ooh, on the spot.
You're better at saying that.
No, no,
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, plus that you have to take in consideration that you never know what, when that one story that you wrote about your idea or that one sentence,
yes,
it may be read by someone across the world, but it may make a change. I mean, I actually wrote a post one time where simple little things like that, where I think one of it was, a physicist that wrote a short story, and across the world, Andrei Sakharov read it, and he changed his mind on nuclear armaments. He was a designer, and so he actually started protesting against nuclear arms.
Wow.
And he claimed that that pivot point in his life was reading that short story that this one physicist in America wrote.
See, you never know.
You never know. I mean, that's the thing. You never know who may read it, and it may change their life.
Yeah.
That's
why
you
have to continue
with
the struggle.
We all have gotten some sort of feedback from some of our viewers or listeners, mm-hmm, or readers. And I know I get things, and it seems to come at just the right time. You know, when you get a piece of hate mail, which,
yeah,
I don't even mention on my site at all. I kind of, you know, let them write the stuff to me, whatever they want. But, you know, you can't help but take some of that stuff personal, you know. And so you're trying to get through your day, and
you got
all this on your mind, and, you know, this guy said he was going to kill you if he knew where you lived. And,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden somebody sends you something and goes, you know, one of your writers wrote this, you know. And it may be something right now off the top of my head. It was something that somebody had wrote about mental health, and that it resonated with this person and just gave them a whole new outlook on one of their family members. But anyway, the point being that, you know, you get that feedback, and it tells you you're on the right path, you know.
Yeah.
And you, exactly like you always saying, you never know who it is that's going to listen. It may be just one line they read or one sentence they hear. You never know. Myself, I keep going by, I look at myself as a pebble in the shoe, you know, that even though I may not have anything that's earth-shattering or exclusive, I keep bringing up the things that people don't hear.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be comfortable, that being the pebble in the shoe, but it gets their attention. And then they may look other places and find out more information.
Yeah. Nobody here is doing this for their own glory. But like you said, Joe, man, when you get that compliment or something, just somebody, I know, the last time I got somebody recently said, oh, I finally got it. It's like the last time you put something, you know, I mean, I post a lot of the same, well, topic things on a lot, but she finally got it. One of those got through to her.
Yeah.
And like, you just don't know. And you don't know who it's going to affect. I was surprised that it was her. So it's a challenge. You know, it keeps the adventures fresh.
I have a question I'd like to put to everybody, just because I'm curious. On your close family relationships or interpersonal relations, does your activism carry over into that? In other words, like the positive and the negative feedback, do you also get that from people who are, you know, close to you in your immediate network of people that maybe don't understand, but, you know, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I mean, I'm curious just how everyone, their own daily lives go with their activism as far as
good
relationships
question
with other people.
Very good question, yeah.
Good question. Very good one. Actually, I'll answer that one, Joe. My family is my sister and my nephew, and with my nephew, he's encouraged by learning things from me, and also now being in school, gone away to college, he comes back with, wow, yeah, you hit that one on the head, you know, and gets it, whereas before he was kind of secluded in sort of a
Christian kind of thing on one side and whatever, but my sister and I have the same humanity. Let me put it that way. We have the same heart, but she still thinks very much that we have to, you know, have some faith in the president. And it's kind of tough. She doesn't always, but she's always quick to say, well, you know, what are you going to do? Storm the White House? And, no, darling, I'm just going to keep my big fat mouth going.
When you hit the patriotism button, you know, and sometimes it's so personal with some people, you know.
Well, I no longer have any faith in nationalism or borders. I think it's part of the overall problem of Mother Earth.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Is this Janelle?
It is.
Janelle's
here.
Hey, Janelle.
Hi. It's JG.
That's right.
Great show.
So tell us. So, what do you think about what we've been talking about, Janelle?
Well, you know, when you said call in, we were talking about, you know, our influence on other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of profound influences around me, but I find that I'm the pessimist. And I'm lucky to have some positives. Are there positive pessimists? Well, you know, I mean, recently I was called a doomer. And
hard.
Well, it was actually meant somewhat as a compliment because of all the information that we share around the environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I when I said that no one listens to me, I was referring to I don't feel like I'm having a larger impact on the greater community. You know, it seems like my circle is small, so I don't.
But it's growing. For our listeners that don't know, Janelle runs a group called Earth Matters on Facebook.
I'm familiar with that group.
Right.
But, you know, Janelle brings up a good point. How do you, you know, when it comes to climate change, how do you try to convey the information and the facts without being what someone that doesn't follow that would call a doomer? I mean, it really is a serious, you know, earth-shattering possibility. And you know, to draw attention to that and the need and the importance of it, how do you express the facts around it, you know, like the Antarctica, you know, and the CO2.
Well, I think one of the ways you definitely tell the facts, but then you come up with some other something people can do. And I know people are very divided on the issue of petitions. I personally will sign petitions because I think a few of them actually make a difference. But, I mean, maybe if you have something or if there's a bill that somebody you know is sponsoring to do with climate change. So while you're talking about the doom and gloom, you can also give somebody something to do that could actually make a difference.
You know, on the petition thing, Raw, you know, you have to sign if your heart persuades you to it.
Mm-hmm.
and your intelligence. Course, but the thing is that more and more folks are understanding that these petitions from Credo and from you know all the little groups that have come up that are getting money to collect emails and make petitions, they do print them out, they do deliver them to Congress, they deliver them to not to Congress on the Hill, but to all of the senators and congresspeople's offices in Washington, and they're thereby filed in a closet and rarely looked at. This is just the way it is. It's business as usual and has been ever since the EPA.
I call my congresspeople.
That's the thing. You call.
Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, if you're calling and then probably at the same time he's answering the phone call, he has a $1.5 million salaried lobbyist in his office
the table.
Pressing his ear, you know, who's going to get the attention? You know, to me, climate change is very frustrating because, you know, you can, you know, do your part, but it just seems like it's such a trivial thing when these huge events are occurring that have such a profound effect on climate change, and they don't seem to be affected at all. You know,
it's an eye roll topic. That's what I call it. As soon as you start talking about, you know, the people just roll their eyes. You know, how do you get around that?
Yeah.
I guess you just wait for opportunities and keep up the howl. You know,
progress toward democracy. We've recently had a couple different people who are pretty active. One is Franklin Lopez, who has a radio show, The Stimulator. And then we've also had Anthony Marr a couple times. And particularly Franklin, he's not telling people to go out and commit dreadful, and I use dreadful tongue-in-cheek, acts that are against the law. But some people did come on the show that who are pretty radical, and it was like we weren't telling them not to kind of thing, because the radical element may be what will save us down the road. So,
or you need a lot of different angles to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that, I think, is the beauty of Worldwide Hippies, what we used to talk about there, Joe, and also when you just talking about climate change and the reality, okay, the reality that what's done is done, okay, really highlights the need collaboration and cooperation, because we need each other now to move forward through the dark time, if you will, because it's done and it's coming. I think of people like Tim DeChristopher and what was happening, you know, in the environmental movement when 360350.org was formed some years ago. I mean, this is serious shit, and that's why we need each other. And anyway, I just think that nothing highlights the need for community and holding tight to each other and making the best of whatever we find better than climate change.
Look what's happening, though, out there. I mean, you had 40,000 people, well, close to 40,000 people in Washington. These are committed people that got out there. A lot of them were that was only half the crowd that was local, and that was Maryland or Virginia and Washington. The rest traveled great lengths to come and be a part of this from all over the world, mind you. And there's all of these people who are doing their very best to work within the structure that is in place, and that's where collaboration and cooperation from us, the alternative, independent, and very much on my from my perspective, I'm just a radical, you know, because I that's where I've landed, being once a liberal type of thing. My point is that, and Janelle is, you know, being extraordinarily honest and saying, look, this is where we're at. These are the horrifying things that are happening and what's going to change. And I understand and feel her frustration. But the cooperation between all of us, including the folks that, you know, and these are people who we are inspiring, and we should, and I try to myself, and I'm sure you all do, try to take the action whenever you can to be a part of the protest if you can get there, or demonstrations, and be willing to put your money where your mouth is, too, and to go to jail for this. I mean, you know, it's everybody, though, has their how far they can go. And everybody, and this is, again, where collaboration and cooperation come into play. I mean, a gentleman who's a vice president of a company and has a family and who's working every day does not maybe have the option to go and get arrested for two or three days when he has responsibilities, especially if his job is one that is providing some positive answers. You know?
Do you think that the paradigm for protests is possibly changed and we need to look at a new paradigm? In other words, when you have that amount of people, and this was all through the Bush regime also, I was taught in Washington so many times, and it just, nothing was reported the way it should. And I can remember thinking then, and even stronger now, how maybe, you know, we're using a paradigm of the 60s and the 50s, that maybe we need to find a new way. What that way is, I don't know. But maybe we need to find a new way of protesting instead of in large groups. Maybe the same amount of people in small groups. I mean, that's just a suggestion, but it seems to me like the protests in Washington just don't work anymore because the media is not there.
Let me bring up this quote, and I'd like to get the thoughts of everybody in this group. Okay, the quote is, the task of an activist is not to navigate systems of oppressive power with as much personal integrity as possible. It is to dismantle these systems.
Dismantle them, yes.
And what are your thoughts about that? I mean, is it... for climate change, has it gotten to the point where groups such as Deep Green Resistance and others that maybe they have gone beyond what they feel is possible and I guess throwing their bodies on the gears in a way, you know, something they feel that maybe can be saving the planet by doing these things that in the short term you could look at as illegal or whatever, you know.
If you're not getting your message out one way, we take our example from the way the system worked itself. They never sleep. So we still have to find different ways to approach something. I mean, I'm not going to rule out anyone or tell them they're wrong if their goals are correct and they're what I consider on the right path. It's not up to me to tell them what not to do.
Exactly.
I know during the 60s I was more, I'll say, radical in my actions as far as demonstrating and stuff like that. But I think there's a new radicalness now with the way you use the internet, and I think all angles are, you know, are open because
they're all valuable.
They have no limits.
They all have.
You have limits. You lose.
Yes.
I know the Black Bloc during the Occupy movement. A lot of bad press, and I mean, we've got good and bad in all groups, but I see the need for them. And, you know, and I've got some people that, you know, close to me don't agree with that, but that doesn't mean I'm going to join them. That's not my way of doing things. But
the true Black Bloc,
I think,
was pretty good. Yeah.
You know, on Tuesday of last week, prior to that, when they were all being arrested in front of the White House, Bobby Kennedy said it is time for civil disobedience. Now, when a fellow like that who takes his law very seriously, I mean, the guy is also, if you know anything about the Waterkeeper Alliance and what he has accomplished for the good of the environment in this country, you listen pretty closely to what the gentleman has to say, and he said it was time for civil disobedience in this country because they're not listening to anything else. And if enough people get in front of the truck, like all of those wonderful activists down in Texas, which my buddy Cherie Foytlin was one of them, sat and chained herself to a fence. Did you see what those people, I know Janelle has seen it, those guys down there with the tar sands going over, you know, they haven't even gotten the okay. And they're tearing up this lady's farm, the place where Daryl Hannah was. Those guys had sat down on the caterpillars and were putting their limbs in between the tracks. So
I saw
the
pictures.
My gosh, do you know what kind of, I don't know if I would be capable of doing something. That took incredible courage.
It
doesn't have to be violent, you know, against someone.
It doesn't have to be against other people, but this is what the Tibetan monks have been doing to call attention. You know, they burn themselves.
Yes, the
self-immolation.
Right. So it's very dangerous, and you're right, it doesn't have to be violence towards someone else. There's so many ways to do this. Our time is just about
up. Another thing is that, you know, that there is a lot of fear and risk because we have to be willing. If we're going to put ourselves on the line like that, we have to be willing to get arrested.
Since our time is up, I just want to ask people.
If I get arrested, I lose my job.
If you have any last-minute words of advice to somebody who wants to get involved and isn't quite sure how they want to learn to collaborate, what should they do?
Do anything. Reach out and start with social networking.
I say call Joe. If you want to collaborate, go to Worldwide Hippies and Joe.
I got to work for people.
Okay. Call Joe, because really and truly, because of Joe, I stepped out of my comfort zone and became more active. I found Gwen and David and got active in Roundtree 7. And now we're collaborating together, and we're collaborating with you. So, like Imani White once said about 420 Soulfire for the Gulf, we invite you to come and join us.
There you go.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. Thank you all very, very much for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And everyone will be hearing from me because I want to get to know you better.
Right.
That's what it's about.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.